Hey, before we start this episode, just want to remind you that the Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business is available everywhere that you like to buy books, and you can get it in paperback, Kindle, and even as an audiobook. I'll have links on where you can purchase in the podcast notes. Okay, back onto the show.
You are listening to One Broken Mom, a podcast dedicated to raising awareness about mental health, parenting, and self-improvement. I'm the host, Ami Quirconi. One Broken Mom is not a family show. It is intended for adults only and may contain adult language. Sometimes the topics are serious, but you can count on the episodes to be entertaining. Also, One Broken Mom is not offering any psychiatric or medical diagnosis. We're just here giving away useful and important information. So, if you're ready to hear real talk by real people so that we can all get better together, then you're in the right place, and welcome.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. You didn't know this, but today is one of my brass ring guests. And what I mean by that is this is another woman that I have an opportunity to speak with who wrote a life-changing book for me that ended up really filling in a lot of details for myself personally. One of the things that I have constantly struggled with and I've told a lot of people about, you know, as we go through this journey of understanding our trauma and our history and figuring out how to make peace with it and then how to integrate the new changes that we need in our behaviors, I was really surprised throughout my life and throughout this, you know, the last several years, how hard money really was for me and money disorders. And so I actually, at the beginning of last year in 2020, it was a personal goal of mine to really remain focused on understanding my relationship with money and my sense of value and, you know, hoping to win lotteries, you know, however they came about, in lieu of actually sitting down and addressing some of my personal kind of skill sets around it. And I'm really proud of myself because in the last year, I was able to do things that I'd never done before, completely pay off all my debt, have a savings account of, you know, over $10,000, you know, put money away, just liberate myself from the constant pressures of scarcity and debt. And that was really hard to do and was very focused to do. And so, Barbara's here today, and I actually reference her book. So for those of you that have actually read my book, I reference her book, The Secrets of Six-Figure Women, because when she wrote it, she very elegantly and simply was able to take the research that she'd uncovered when she interviewed over 150 high-earning women and paint the clear distinctions between those who earn and those who are chronic under-earners. And that was the camp I was in for quite some time. And she's published many books since then on the topic of women and finances and has taught tons of classes and continues today through seminars and coaching, helping women understand why money is hard and how to overcome that. Now, I suspect for my non-women listeners that are out there that there's going to be a lot of good stuff that you're going to learn from this important conversation. And so I'm excited to introduce to everyone, Barbara Huizen. So welcome to my show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Amy.
Yes, this is, again, so exciting. I've had this great opportunity as I've done One Broken Mom to, you know, first read some just incredible books and then have the privilege of being able to invite them on to the show, the authors onto the show. And like I said, you're definitely one of them. And what was interesting was you and I did a summit together like a couple of weeks ago. You were right before me and I was like, oh my God, I'm following her. Like, this doesn't make sense. Like, what world is this in? And then I was like, okay, so I'm going to reach out to you like right away and get you on. And I didn't realize it because your name is different than the book because I have a book by Barbara Stanny on my bookshelf. And that's not what you're going by anymore. So what happened? What's up with the name change?
So I got married.
Congratulations.
I got married 10 years ago, but I didn't change my name for years. And my name was Barbara Stanny, which was my ex-husband's name, my second ex-husband. And I thought one day I was just sitting looking out the window. I was thinking, why do I have the name of someone who was never happy with me when I married a man who is loves, appreciates, and supports me 100%? And that's when I decided I'm going to change my name. I didn't want to go to my maiden name because that was another man, my father, who was never happy with me. And it wasn't just that he loves, appreciates, supports me. The reason I really did it, and I wrote about it on my website, is that I saw myself differently through his eyes. He taught me, you know, there's a saying by the man who developed attachment theory that you learn who you are through the eyes of those you love. And I learned, oh, I got chills. Mm-hmm. I learned to love myself more than ever, seeing myself through his eyes. So I am now Barbara Hewson.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, and I'm going to be in the same boat because my last name, Quirconi, is actually my ex-husband's name as well. But I have two children and one of them is still under the age of 18. And I made a conscious decision that I was going to keep the name of my kids. It wasn't that I was keeping my ex's name. But then what happens is that you then go and you create like this public, you know, life around a name that it's like, it's not like, you know, it's my ex's name. So my kids and I have actually talked about like once my daughter turns 18 and now that I don't have to worry about showing up with paperwork and showing, you know, proof of, you know, being her mom and signing off on everything. We've toyed with the idea of all three of us just coming up with a brand new last name for our new family and just seeing where we go from there. And so that might be something on the horizon, but I'm like you, it's like, well, then what do I do when there's books published and, you know, all this content that's around a name and sometimes you just got to go for it. Right.
I just didn't worry. I figured the universe would take care of it. And there were some bumps and there were some weird things, but I didn't care.
Yeah. It's just a name, right?
it was far more than a name. It was a profound event for me to do this.
Mm. Well, that's really cool. Now you touched on your dad. And I think that a lot of people would be really surprised to learn because you have a history, a family history in the world of finance. So who is your dad and why would anybody know who he was?
So my father was the R of H&R Block, Richard Block. But the only advice he ever gave me about money was don't worry. And under that was the unspoken assumption there'll always be a man to take care of you, which I have to tell you, I thought was great advice. I didn't understand money. I just wanted to spend it. And there was always a man. First, there was my father. Then I married a man who was a lawyer. And then he became a stockbroker. So he was perfect. But should I tell my story now?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, okay. Let's go.
And so I found out very, very early in our marriage is that he was a compulsive gambler. And I stayed married to that man for 15 years. And the insane part is I continued to let him manage the money because that's how terrified and intimidated I was by anything financial. And he went through almost all of my inheritance. And after, so finally we got divorced after 15 years and I decided money is not my thing. I do not want to deal with money. Well, I will tell you, I have this theory that if you don't deal with your money will deal with you. And it sure dealt with me. I got tax bills for way over $1 million for back taxes my ex didn't pay for illegal deals he got us in. I did not have anywhere close to $1 million. My ex had left the country and my father would not lend me the money. And that's when I knew I had three daughters. One was just a baby. They were young. I was not going to raise those girls on the street. So I went to classes, I read the books, and my eyes would glaze over, my brain would fog up. I just felt terminally stupid, but I was committed. I was committed. I was committed to my children. I was not going to have them be like me. And I really believe that when you make a commitment, like a down to your toes, no backdoor commitment, the universe revolves to help you reach your goal. And at the time, I was a journalist writing for the San Francisco Business Times. And I got hired for a freelance project to interview women who were smart with money. And those interviews changed my life. I not only got smart about money, but I wrote my first book, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, How Women Get Smart About Money. And suddenly I had this whole new career. I was traveling all over the country doing financial education for women, but I couldn't make money. I couldn't make money. So I decided I'd interview women who made lots of money. And that was the book you read. And that book changed my life because I started making six figures and I was well into my 50s. I started making six figures before I even finished writing the book. And then I wanted to teach others what I was learning. And I started giving Overcoming Under Earning classes, which was my third book. And now 7 books later, you and I are talking and I'm an expert on finances. Who knew?
Well, I think it's a great example of that you can be. Like, I mean, you can come from, just never looking at it to turning yourself around and actually prospering it by being interested in it and then being committed to changing that. Like, you know, part of what we'll talk about today is it doesn't just happen like instantly, the changes, they end up coming and sometimes you backslide. I know I backslide, like I'd make a change and then to be like backslide because of all the fear and the denial, like, you know, one of my, you know, sins of money was the financial denial, right? Like you just said, if you don't handle it, it'll handle you. So if I just like, don't look at that bill over there because I'm afraid, I've got this script in my head that says there's not enough money. Ironically, there was always enough money. It was just where it was going and how it was being reallocated because of soothing. It all catches up with you. And then you're just like in this constant role and you have to just be committed to stop. Go ahead.
For me, what I realized from my own journey, getting financial success and getting smart about money is really a 4-pronged process. It's a combination of the outer work, the inner work, the higher work, and the deeper work of wealth. And it's when I finally combine those. And the outer work is, you know, that's the practical stuff, you know, telling the difference between a stock and a bond, figuring out how to negotiate for a raise. But when you get stuck in that, that's when it's important to do the inner work, to look at your attitudes, beliefs, and early decisions you made about yourself and money. And even when you explore that, there's another component, especially for women, but for all people, which is the higher work of wealth, and that's the spiritual component. And that's really understanding why you are on this planet. And you can't possibly pursue your purpose and play full out if you're struggling to make ends meet. And so I think especially women, we are so purpose driven that we may not be money driven, but we are purpose driven. And then there's the fourth component, which is a really fairly new body of work for me. And it's the subject of my latest book. And that is how the mind and the brain work together. And when you understand that, you can expedite the learning process and really, really lower your resistance significantly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I wanted to ask about the marriage there, because something that came into my, that I think some people have experienced was, would you have classified any part of that relationship as financially abusive?
It was total financial abuse.
Okay. And I throw that up because, because that's a form of domestic and relational abuse that a lot of people that I raise that awareness that when that financial abuse is a real thing and it actually ends up really driving women when they leave relationships deep into poverty because they've been financially abused or abused even after. So, do you want to expand on what that looked like in your relationship? Because I think people are surprised. You know,
financial abuse is any time you don't have access to or denied access to money. And it is a absolute form of domestic abuse. And it is what keeps women in abusive situations. It's a horrible problem. And I'm so glad you're talking about it because it's just not talked about enough. Mm-hmm. So my husband was lying to me. He was gambling away my money. He was abusing my credit cards. And of course, I gave him the keys to the kingdom because I abdicated all responsibility. But that is absolutely a form of domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that and being honest and vulnerable about that, because, it's also a source of shame for people. Because I remember having a conversation with somebody and I was telling them like what my experience was. I was in the relationship still. And this woman who was a financial advisor looked at me and said, "Are you an idiot?" And I was just like, and I felt ashamed because here I am, I have an engineering degree. I'm not an idiot. I understand, you know, dollars and cents. I even ran companies and actually had no issues with running finances and companies and setting budgets and meeting, you know, and doing all of that work. But personally, I was in a situation where I was being, like you said, my resources that I was contributing, I wasn't allowed to be able to access them. But yet my partner would take thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and just go fling it everywhere and spend it and lie about taking it and do whatever. And it was genuinely an abusive. And when I was trying to talk this out, like, what should I do with somebody? They looked at me and they called me stupid.
Oh, that hurts my heart.
I know, doesn't it? It triggers me when I say that. Like, I talk about that. Yeah.
I know. And there's just a real lack of understanding in the financial industry about the emotional aspects of money. I remember years ago, right after I wrote my first book, years and years ago, over 20 years ago, a pollster called me from Harris Polls. And they were doing this big poll for this financial firm, one of the big ones. And he was asking about women and money. And one day he called and he had just come from doing a focus group with women. And I said, how was it? And he said, oh my God, women, when it comes to money, women are very emotional. Like, this was news to him. For us women, money can be and is very emotional. And this is my problem with the financial industry. Is they don't get it. They don't get it. They haven't gotten the memo that men and women, when it comes to money, are different.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've had a guest on before and we've talked about, you know, there's a lot to do with the messaging around it. I've done some research. I'm sure you've seen this too. You know, the senses of entitlement, you know, when we talk about some of the experiences that we have and like you're growing up and being told like, it's not your problem. Don't worry about it. And those are those subconscious messages or directly conscious messages that we get that just make it like, you know, we obviously are incapable of handling any of this. So therefore, but yet men on the other hand are, you know, have conscious messages of to be independent and to pursue it and to be competitive and, you know, and get all the resources. And you know, you talk about purpose and I think about that, you know, women on the other hand, grow up with this idea of this purpose also comes from doing things for free because it's what's needed from you. Let's see, your family needs you to show up in some way of, you know, caring and taking care of everybody and not being compensated for it at all or paid for it or an expectation that it's all free labor that we give away to everybody. Which then feels good because when we're rewarded for it, like, oh, you're such a good daughter. What would we do with, you know, what would we do without you and how you always show up and take care of everything? I know that was part of the message that got in the way of me showing up at work then was that I needed to not be paid as much because it was my duty still, this script of taking care of everybody, but men are not taught that.
Well, you know, I think us becoming financially savvy liberates both. I will never forget one of my very first book signings when I did the book reading. For my first book, a man comes up to me afterwards and he says, I am not going to buy your book for my wife. And I thought, you chauvinist. And he said something that I've never forgotten. He said, I'm afraid if she'll read it, she'll see what a lousy job I've done with the finances and she'll leave me. So while we are groomed to be financially dependent, men are groomed to be financially savvy, but no one taught either one of us how to make or manage money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think about that too with my own kids. Like that is the one thing, because I know that I wasn't, you know, I grew up and there were grandparents that were there to help take care of any of the financial shortfalls. You know, there, you know, the languaging that was constant in the house was that there's not enough, there's not enough, there's not enough. I saw something different though at times. I saw money being spent where I didn't think it needed to be spent. And like I said, I grew up with a math and I got an engineering degree. So I have the capabilities of understanding the numbers, but the lack of understanding really, you know, the right behaviors with money and how to behave with it in a way that's positive, like how to save it now, how to not go into debt. You know I went into debt as soon as I was old enough to get a credit card. That's why it was such a big deal to pay off all of my debt, because that's the first time since I was 18 years old that I wasn't carrying credit card debt. That's 30 some years of constant credit card debt. And that happens to a lot of people that, you know, that go straight into debt with no model of how to do it any differently, except to borrow, borrow, borrow. And if you don't have enough, go get more. And if you feel really bad and it makes you feel good to buy something, go buy something for yourself, go sign up for something. Or if you're in an abusive situation, you become a financial enabler for somebody else who's misbehaving with money, and you're taking on additional credit to be able to fill in the gaps, you know, that are out there. And that happens a lot to women. Now, your book, I want to talk about the under-earner, because I think that, you know, you had in Six Figures, and I know this is not the most recent book, but it's the one we'll kind of, you said it changed your life, and it definitely changed mine. You interviewed all these women, and you found these really strong characteristics that defined what a high-earning woman was and what she believed versus what the chronic under-earner you know, believed. And one of them that I remember that we've mentioned is the sense of purpose, that an under-earner really feels that it's wrong to charge for your purpose and to make money doing something that should be gifted to the world. And, you know, you had brought up that, well, you've got a limit on how often you can, you know, how much service you can really do if you don't actually get paid to do that. What were some of the other things that broke, that you broke out, that are really worth mentioning to everybody between these two different types of mindsets?
First, define what an under-earner is. An under-earner is anyone who earns less than she needs or desires, despite her efforts to do otherwise. If you find yourself saying, gosh, I'd love to make more money, but you are an under-earner. An under-earner has nothing to do with the amount you make. You can make six figures and be an under-earner. And you can make far less and not be. There is such a thing that I call a mindful low earner. That's someone who is doing what she loves because it feeds her soul, but she makes enough to meet her needs. Under-earning is never a conscious decision. It never feeds your soul. It is always a condition of deprivation. And not just of money, but of time, of joy, of choices, of freedom, and always of self-esteem. And I think there's, you know, women are far more apt to be under-earners than men. Of course, men are under-earners too. But I think there's many reasons why, but I think primarily it all boils down to three reasons. First, we devalue ourselves. We give away our skills, our time, our knowledge for free or bargain prices because we don't believe we're worth more. But this little voice in our head says, who do you think you are? No one's going to pay you that. And it is from that devaluing mindset. The second reason is we are notoriously codependent. We put everybody else's needs before our own, just like you were saying. And not just friends and family, but perfect strangers. But it's like, you know, but self-denial always leads to anger, to resentment, to pain, and to often illness. It's not the stuff that success is made of. But every time we go to put ourselves first, every time, we feel guilty. We feel bad, which brings me to the third and the most important reason is that we don't want to feel uncomfortable. And the number one requirement for going to the next level is the willingness to be uncomfortable, because success in anything, I don't care if it's making more money or losing more weight, it always lies just outside your comfort zone.
Yeah. And actually, when you said comfort, of course, my chest tightens because I know that feeling, right? Like I can think of all the times that, you know, where when the money comes up, where I'm like, oh man, I'm doubting myself. Like, should I do it? You know, they're going to be mad at me, or, you know, I'm going to lose this, whatever it is, the job, the client, the whatever. And I have, you know, many times been just sick and, you know, doubting whether or not I should have sent that email or said it that way, or, you know, all this stuff. But I know, like you just said, yes, sometimes people will reject you, but that doesn't mean that you have to backpedal on that. Like you have to also have that sense of, you know, they're just not my people. There are people out there that won't reject me. And I just happen to be talking to somebody who doesn't see the value in what I have to have. It doesn't mean I have no value. They don't see it. And there's a difference between those two things, right?
The number one requirement is that willingness to do what you don't think you can do, don't want to do, are scared of getting punished for. I ask under earners, when's the last time you did something you didn't think you could do or you were scared to do? And they kind of scratch their head and think, I ask high earners, and they say all the time, it's a way of life. It's I have what I call the high earner slogan. They say, if it's not illegal or immoral, I just say yes. And yeah, the high earners, they fall down. They don't always succeed. But the difference is they get up and they keep going and they keep going. And that is it. It's what I call the stretch. It's the willingness to do what seems, to go from what feels comfortable to what may seem impossible. That is what separates the high earners from the under earners.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for people that are listening, like, go read that book. Like, it's fantastic. It'll help break that down. Now, when I've talked about this before on the show, we're talking about money and we tend to think that our relationship with money is rooted only in what we've been taught about money, but sometimes it's more complex than that. That it may not
always
be,
it's always right? More yeah. complex than that.
So why is that? Why is that the case? Because I think when people are like, well, my family had money, I don't know why I have issues with money, or whatever it is. But it sometimes, like, I know my own sense of worth really often had nothing to do with money. It had to do with some other things of belief systems that, like, I wasn't worthy enough to be around people. Like, this was my biggest one that I'd uncovered. I never felt like I was good enough to be around people who had money because of all the messages that of everything that came through, in my personal life. And I was like, holy crap. Well, I'm never going to make it if I don't believe that I belong here. that was in my self-sabotage, script right. in my head.
It was interesting that book you referenced that you like, Secrets of Six-Figure Women. My agent called me one day with the idea for the book. And she said, I have a great idea for you. Now, meanwhile, I'm a chronic under-earner. And she said, I have a great idea for a book. Why don't you interview women who make lots of money? Because there are more women now than ever before. So she's talking, all the time she's talking, I'm hating the idea. I'm thinking of these designer dress snobs who are totally intimidated, not completely boring. And suddenly I stop myself. And I think, if this is what I think of successful women, how will I ever let myself become one? And that changed everything. And that I became a high earner. And 20 years later, I am still a high earner. And so problems with money are never about money. There's always something deeper. And that's really the work, is to see what it kind of look under the hood and see what's going on. It could be the messages you got. It could be a range of different things, but there's always something deeper.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your journey, it's pretty interesting because, we talked about, like, here you are, you came into this field, being drug into the field, it almost seems like, right? And now becoming this expert in it. But you made a choice to actually go back to school and actually get a psychology. Is it a psychology degree that you ended up?
Oh, no, before that. That's when I was still married.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
all
no,
right.
No. I got my master's degree in psychology. And I became, and while I was married, I became a career counselor way back in the 70s. But I didn't make money. I didn't make money at all.
Yeah. But you apply it today now, like more of the neuroscience behind it. So where one was a study of like the social science behind it, you've been able to actually really bring in what's going on with the brain and being able to. Yeah.
My latest book I just happen to have here is called awesome. Rewired for Wealth. And that's when three steps any woman can take to program her brain for financial success. And that's when I brought in the neuroscience. I started studying neuroscience about 7-8 years ago. And I saw that it really makes a difference because the brain controls our behavior. And when you understand how you can change the brain, you can so much more easily change your behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that that's something that I apply with coaching too, and that was the thing that actually changed for me was this understanding of, the neuroscience behind, the origin of the emotions and the behaviors that we have and that they actually, with some work and dedication to it, you can put into practice the new pattern or the new habit you want to adopt so that you can, strengthen that one versus the old, the old responses. And like you said, I'm sure you've seen this with people that you work with, like when it comes to the topic of money, the first few times you are pushing yourself to that uncomfortableness level, it does feel really weird, but that's the brain fighting back against its path that it likes, in its belief system, it doesn't want to change. But the more you're able to keep doing it, you actually end up moving forward and it becomes less and less. I guess, you know, I always want to tell everybody it's scary the first few times, but then it actually does get better, you know, and it gets easier to be able to do that. Yeah.
So I created a 3 steps to rewire for wealth because I wanted to make it easy and I wanted to go a structure. I needed a structure to rewire my brain, not just do. And so that's what I did. I created 3 steps. And the 3 steps are recognize, reframe, and respond differently. That you recognize that those the negative thoughts. Because our brain controls our behavior, but our mind shapes our brain. And so it's what comes from our mind, which are thoughts and feelings, that dig those old neural pathways deeper or start building new ones. So it's how to shift your thinking so you can start weakening those old neural pathways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, when people have, you know, like I've seen this here, like entrepreneurs, you know, that start these businesses, you know, that's one of the things, you know, the areas that I work with is businesses and entrepreneurs. And they don't, you know, they never realize that they're paying themselves like less than minimum wage in their job. And they, and they're always, you know, when you're talking about them, like some of the things like this denial, you know, asking about how much they know their money, you know their own numbers. They don't really know their numbers because they're kind of looking the other way. And some of it is fear, right? There's a fear of what happens if I start to acknowledge that I might be making mistakes with my money, or I might be misbehaving with my money. And so when we talk about teaching people, sometimes, like you said earlier, the financial institutions seem to think that if you just teach literacy, that actually will help everything. You know, like you said, that they're unaware how emotional this actually can be for people. So what are some good ways for people to neutralize some of these fears that crop up and make money decisions less from the emotional situation and turn them into strategic decisions? Like, what are some of the techniques and strategies
First, you have to work with the emotions. You can't deny them, because anytime you try to repress those emotions, they only get stronger, and it takes more energy to keep them down, which is less energy available to you to move forward. But that said, I will give you 3 steps. This is what I did, because I really had a strong block. So while I was working on the emotional aspects and my fear, I was educating myself, but it was overwhelming. And I've learned that it's small steps consistently taken that will really get you to this remarkable place. And so you try these 3 simple steps for a couple months and you will be amazed. I still do them. I still do them religiously. Every day, read something about money. Even if it's only for 1 or 2 minutes, seriously, 1 or 2 minutes. Even if it's only perusing the headlines of the business section of the paper, even if it's only when you're standing in line at the supermarket, you take Money Magazine instead of People and leaf through it. Even when you, before you go to bed at night, you take a finance book and you read 1 paragraph, because so much of getting smart or smarter is just familiarizing ourselves with the jargon and the current trends. So every day, read something about money just for a minute or two. Every week, have a conversation about money, preferably with someone that knows more than you. I think it is our secrecy and silence that keeps us stuck. We'll moan and groan and complain about money. But when's the last time you sat down with a girlfriend or a colleague or a family member and said, how did you get smart? What's the best advice someone gave you? What's the biggest mistake you made? What would you tell me to do? What's the best thing you've read? Ask questions. So every day read, every week talk, and every month save. Automatically, don't even think about it, have the bank transfer your money to a checking account or from your payroll check to a savings account. Because what you don't miss what you don't see. And small amounts, it could be small amounts, $25 a month, it adds up. Even with the low interest rate environment we're in, it adds up very quickly. So every day read, every week talk, and every month save, and you'd be amazed.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great. the consistency of it too, and not having it be like, you know, you're not recommending you need to go out and like get a master's degree in finance here in order to be able to get a handle of it.
It's just,
you know, the story that I shared in my book on how I finally turned a corner was, you know, I had this moment where, you know, I'm in the midst of going through this divorce and I'm supposed to be getting a settlement and it just gets tabled and tabled and tabled. And I'm frustrated because I realized, well, first I'm frustrated. I'm just upset, right? And then it's like, okay, I need to sit down and think about why the frustration. Obviously, there's this divorce and it's a pain in the ass. But I felt defeated financially because of the lack of movement in it. And I wrote down and I journaled and I actually wrote it down and I was like, you know what I realize I'm doing? I'm expecting the settlement to be a lottery, like winning a lottery ticket. And I'm still not taking care of my financial house. I've been waiting for just to get this check so that I can just pay things off. But maybe the universe keeps pushing it out there because what am I going to do with this check if I haven't taken care of my house and my financial situation? So I actually at that moment said, okay, well then what keeps me from doing this? And I, you know, I had been trying to budget 1 month in advance and my budget would just break down because all the feelings would come in and like, you know, too many things could creep in that would start to erode confidence or create me, you know, kind of getting diverted. And that feeling of like the feeling of that I didn't have enough was really overwhelming. It really felt like I didn't have enough. I was in debt, you know, and I was taking care of two kids. And I mean, I'm not going to be ashamed of feeling like there wasn't enough. I had things that were past due that I just couldn't see how I could ever get out of debt. Cause like I said, I've been in debt since I was 18 years old. That was kind of status quo for me. So then it was like, okay, if 1 month is too overwhelming, then I'm just going to do it one paycheck at a time, 2 weeks. I'm not going to even worry about what's out there on day 15. I'm only going to look at all the bills within that 2 week period. I'm going to take that one big paycheck that I get and I'm going to pay off everything right then and there. And then I'm going to go the next 2 weeks and the next 2 weeks. And I did that. And within a couple of months, my anxiety levels dramatically dropped. And ironically, I saw that I actually had enough money to pay all my bills. And so I started to do that. I was like, I can't, you know, what if this settlement never happens? Then what's going to happen? Like, am I just going to keep spiraling and being bankrupt? Like, that's not an option for me. That's not the, you know, the future I want for my kids. And then the switch went in my head. Like, I mean, it did. It was just that little tiny, just drilling a new groove in there for me 2 weeks at a time, 2 weeks at a time. And then it got to the place where when 2 weeks came up and if I did not sit down and do my books, then my anxiety started to creep up. It was like, oh, I have to have a sense of, you know, now I need to know what's going on and I have to have my hands on and figure out what's happening. So it went from being afraid of looking at it and addressing it to being afraid when I didn't do it because I knew I saw all the benefits of it. And that was profound. And like I said, that just started the next step of like, I got one bill paid off and now I got to put that money onto the next bill and then the next bill. And then I did get a settlement and it was not even close to what, you know, I've air quoted that word, should have gotten, but because I'd already put all these other metrics in place, it was enough to actually pay off everything. Like the rest of it all got paid off the way. So I ended up winning a lottery, but the skill I got from it was so much better because if I had just gotten a big check, I would have never done the work that I needed to do. And that's why I think it's so important. Like what you said here is it really doesn't have to take a lot, but once you start to do it, that's a profound, I feel so proud of myself, you know, for this. And I know that like you've done this, right? We know we can do this if we, you know, take the time and the energy to overcome the fear and all the feelings that, you know, come around with, you know, making us believe we can't do it or it'll never happen or we're not worth it, you know?
Wow. That's a great story. That's a really good story.
It's embarrassing sometimes, you know, like you talk about, like, we don't like to share our stories about our finances because nobody wants to admit that they struggle or have problems with it. We all try to look like we've got it all together.
Well, right? I don't. And I think that I think is my biggest contribution is that I think early on, I decided I'm going to tell my story, no matter how embarrassing it is. So I can help at least one other woman who is struggling just like me. And my goal is to be a role model. That is my goal. That is my big goal. I want people to see that, yes, I had money. Yes, I lost it. Yes, I got it back. Yes, I gave my power away, but I took my power back. Because honestly, I believe this from the beginning, that women's difficulties with money have little, if anything, to do with money. And it has everything to do with our fear of or ambivalence about power, because we don't understand power from a feminine perspective. And my definition of a powerful woman is someone who knows who she is, who knows what she wants, and expresses that in the world unapologetically. So in other words, our fear of our power is our fear of becoming all we can be. And that is exactly what is required to not just get smart about money, but to create wealth. That's what I want to encourage women, to create wealth, to become a container that can attract, that can sustain, and that can grow our money.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to applaud that. That's an amen right there. Thank you so much. So this is a perfect time. How can people connect with you, and what is everything that you have available for folks aside from the book, Rewire Your Brain? I definitely will have that on the...
Rewire for Wealth. It's not called
Rewire for Wealth. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. It is Rewiring the Brain. But I'll have a link for that in the podcast notes and to the other books that you offer, but you do coaching and workshops and stuff like that. So would you please share with everybody what some of that is?
The best is to go to my website, Barbara-Husson, H-U-S-O-M, Barbara-Husson. And I think the thing that I love doing coaching, I call it financial therapy because I'm trained as a therapist, but it's focused on finances and everything that goes with it. But I also have what I call an online community. My dream was always to create a safe space for women to come together to talk about money as women. We talk about it very differently than men do. And so I have a community called The Wealth Connection, which we do group coaching twice a month. I bring in experts. We have a book club every quarter. Twice a year, I do a masterclass. I have an Overcoming Under-Earning masterclass coming up, which is all part of the membership. And it's a wonderful community of women supporting women.
Fantastic. And I will have all those links in the podcast notes for everybody to be able to get access to that. Because it's hugely important. I've talked about on the show, how divorce impacts women financially. Like I said, this topic, just because obviously, I've been in it. I've been in financial abusive situations, and I've been my own worst, enemy when it comes to money and finances. And it's truly the, one of the hardest things that in this whole journey of growth and healing and understanding has really been the hardest to do. And I would have been surprised at how much time and energy and focus that it takes and its diligence to do that. And so, again, being able to talk with you about this and the resources that you're providing to people is just hugely important for men and women alike. Because like I said, or like you said, I'm not going to take credit for what you said, but when women actually do have their power and their financial independence and their financial freedom, there's nothing bad that comes from that. If women are driven by purpose and are givers, that wealth gets back out either through their own families or into the communities. And I know coaches that, work with women to just do that. Like, just get as much wealth as you can so that you can just do more good and amplify that for more people. And even in your own family, when you've got more security and safety and that's a good thing too. And I think about it as a mother, I think about, what do my children watch and what do they see? And because I don't want them to mimic some of the things that I did. And so I'm always conscious because I don't want for my own kids to be, financially unhealthy, throughout their life. I'd like to see them be able to do the most that they can with their lives and not feel like there isn't enough. That's just a terrible way to live and grow. So thank you so much, Barbara.
I think you become a wonderful role model for your children.
I hope so. Some days I think they agree. Some days not so much.
They may not agree, but believe me, it's seeping in.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to One Broken Mom. You can find podcast notes on my website at amiquercone.com. And there I'll provide all links to all of the resources that we mentioned on the episode. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for other episodes, feel free to send me an email. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show, I'd love to have you be a part of the team. Finally, if you like what you hear, please share the podcast and leave a review so that others can find it. We are all here to get better together. I am the host, Ami Quirconi, and as always, I am super grateful to have you as a listener. Until next time, have a great day.